and wrote it out for all men to identify with. Paul said, that I may know him. 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 That I may know him and the power of his resurrection. Resurrection power. And the fellowship of his sufferings, being made conforming unto his death. Now I am concerned for the move of Community Chapel, the move of God at Community Chapel. I've appreciated so deeply tonight the freedom of the Spirit of the Lord here in our midst. And I have appreciated the freedom we had in the praise Sunday night. And Friday night before that, there is a coming up in freedom in worship that I am very, very pleased with. And the Lord spoke the other night, Friday, Sunday night. And the Lord said, I am pleased this night to bestow upon you of my Spirit. And he alluded to the fact that he did not say it was hinged on and because of directly, but because it wasn't, because it's because of grace. But still, he let us know that people in this assembly were making decisions for him and making decisions to give unto him that which they held back in their heart. They had one little thing held back, and some of them it was a money sack. It was a tithe and an offering, and they held it back. And God said, I see you doing that which is hard to do. I see you saying, I have not been honest in this area. I will give even this, the impossible, this little Isaac that I want to spend to God. And God says, I'm just going to bless you. Because I'm going to bless you. Some of you have held back others. Now, he didn't say these words. No, I'm just saying, in effect, this is what I think. Some of you have held back the whole body. And now, because you're being turned over to do right, I'm going to bless the whole body. God is anxious to bless us. If he can find the slightest, now I say this after the manner of men, if he can find the slightest excuse to bless us, he's going to do it. Well, that's the truth. I'll tell you, the churches of Jesus Christ are just, oh, God, you keep promising, and oh, I just keep wanting it, I want it, I just can't wag this knee, I will give it to us. You know, we feel that way sometimes, like, you know, Lord, you're so stingy with it. I mean, you know, I wouldn't blame you, I mean, personally, you know, but, I mean, I wouldn't ever bring it out of my tongue, but we are struggling down here, Lord, and we're asking for you, and you keep saying, I'm going to give it to you, I've got so much I want to give you. Well, give it. But if you stand up in heaven's shore and look down and see the real situation, you would find the Lord weeping, as it were, saying, oh, my sons and my daughters, I long to bestow my presence. How long I have waited. For years I have pleaded with you. Stiff neck, stubborn, rationalistic, worldly Christians, feeling so pious and at the same time so condemned, thinking you're in shape for the power and glory and majesty and might of God. I want to, if you would just do what I tell you. I'm not asking for perfection. Just look at me a little bit. Just move my way and say yes and open your heart and see if I won't floodgate upon you the blessings of heaven. I am concerned for the move of God here. I believe that if every one of us would say, all right, Lord, all right, devil, all right, self, and here we go, my. Newspapers, Radios and television all over the world would broadcast something unusual going on in this spot. And that's the truth. The thing is, people sit back in their rationalistic minds, some of them, and they say, oh, yeah, we hear you preaching all these delusions of grandeur, sound like Napoleon, you know, on his white steed. Going to go out in the gospel to the ends of the earth and going to do so much, and God's going to come down and the rain's going to fall and all this type of thing. The truth of the matter is, if God's people would humble themselves and go on their faces and be broken vessels and open up by faith and launch out, that could be almost immediate. It could be in showers that God's people have never imagined. The strings of the tongues would be cut loose. Their spirits would be set soaring with joy unspeakable in truth instead of a cliché. Would be present. There would be laughter in the spirit, glorifying God. I don't mean laughter for laughter's sake. I mean people would be just laughing in the spirit because they're so free, and weeping in the spirit because they're free, and dancing in the spirit because they're free, and telling everybody, blabbermouthing it all over the neighborhood, Paul revealing it all over the Seattle. We'd have crowds like you wouldn't imagine. We'd be down in the kingdom before the weekend is over, practically. I tell you, It would cause people, from ministers and people from all over the earth, the very thing that God is calling us to do would be here if we'd snap around. And the only reason it hasn't happened to somebody else is nobody else has beat it to us. Everybody's in the same big hole. Now, I know this makes some people's eyes are going round and round and round and their head's spinning and they don't know what to do with all this, because this is supposed to be such a great, grand place, and God's moving over the face of the earth, and they think everything's marvelous, but it ain't so, my brother. God is moving over the face of the earth, but he's kind of moving like this over the face of the earth. He's just going, a little bit for you. That's almost too much. He's moving, but, brother, when he begins to move, you're going to see a God what can move. Without the move of God, we cannot minister with great results. We'll get a little bit, and that's what we get. We can't worship with freedom. We can't hear the same way without the move of God. You have a real move of God, and people are hearing differently. That's right. You don't even witness the same way without the real move of God. When the real move of God is upon a place, brother, they are red-hot witnesses. You don't obey the same way. People get anxious to obey God when the Spirit of God is really moving. You don't build the body the same way. Nothing is the same way without real moving power of the living God. Now, I know some people are astounded with the power they do see and are scared of it. But, brother, that isn't anything yet, so to speak, in comparison to what God really wants to do and can do and is ready to do when His people... He's long been ready to do a lot more than the Church of Jesus Christ has ever experienced. Most of the churches, and I'm glad you don't stop by the market and come here on the way home. You have no vegetables and fruit to throw at me tonight. Most churches are lukewarm and dead and without power. And that's the truth. And we're not trying to knock down churches or brag on ourselves or anything else. I'm just saying we don't have one-tenth the power we should have. And most churches, they don't have anywhere near the power they should have. They're dead. And there was a ministerial article to pastors in a magazine I received. And you know what the words in the front page were? I can quote them to you. I can quote every word in the front page. It showed this picture. And it said, blah, 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 blah. End of quote. In other words, there's a lot of ministers that are saying they're getting up and they're doing nothing but just blah, 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 blah. They have nothing really to say. God's not really moving upon them. They're not digging deep into the Word. They're not doing anything to build a real assembly. They're getting up and filibustering. My wife and I went to a tent meeting here last week. Maybe that's not fair to tell you when it was, but it was recently. And really, I mean honestly, it was dead. And the minister was almost the entire camp meeting. I mean, he was pump up, zeal. I mean, I have to give it to him, give him the credit for the fact that it wasn't everything it should be, but he had the zeal of everybody else. He was that man. He probably falls dead faint in the bed at night when he finishes. He's trying to pump everybody else, be happy for everybody, be excited for everybody, have faith for everybody. He's trying to get certain stories to get them this way, and he's trying to move them this way, and he's all over the place, and the sweats are pouring, and he's a-going. Everybody's all, no? He's a one-man show trying to get wake him up. The problem, without the real move of God, people sing, "Oh, bless us." You're not worshiping. I have never seen souls pour in, broken, weeping, repenting to one another with deep conviction on their hearts, and true praise bursting out of the Spirit spontaneously, and people filled with joy unspeakable and full of glory, unless there was a real move of God. And I have never seen a real move of God that did not get these results. A real move of God would automatically spawn these results. The problem is that we won't surrender totally to God. By faith. Because of lack of faith. I know selfishness is said to be the reason, and it is. But underneath the unwilling hearts and the selfish hearts is lack of faith. Because if there was enough faith, you wouldn't be selfish. And you wouldn't be unbelieving. I mean, that's the reason. It's lack of faith. I mean, if you had faith in God's power for you and His presence and His love and the glory and what He's doing, everything, then those kind of people are not really stingy. They're not doubting, obviously. They're not unwilling. Even the flesh means nothing when you've got real glorious power of God. The thing is, without the glory, you got to have something. And without the glory of God, you say, "Oh, Lord, what do I have?" And the flesh says, "You got me. Yoo-hoo, here I am. You lucky person." The flesh is ever present with us. And if you don't have the power of God, it's right there demanding. But I want to tell you, when you see people in mighty revival under a mighty anointing of the Holy Spirit and the move of God, oh, they kick that flesh out so fast, make your head swim. That's right. Sins go like that. People are willing to get rid of everything when they really got something to replace it with. Like a little kid, you know, he's sitting on a, like taking candy from a baby. Ever heard of that? Stuck on a sucker? We gave Ryan his first sucker a while back. Some special occasion on his second apple. After a while, I said, are you all through that? No. See. Are you done now? No. See. So take a candy from a baby, you're going to have a fight on your hands. But you put up one of these great, big, marvelous, beautiful, different colored ice cream or something bigger, and that thing goes whoosh, one stroke into the dirt. And they're right for it. I mean, they give that thing up. You'd have to fight for that, but when they get something better, down it goes quick. And that's the way it is in the Church of Jesus Christ when the Spirit of God comes. We have a problem by faith really trusting God's love, trusting His grace, trusting His word, accepting His love, renouncing the world, the sin, and the devil. It's a real struggle, and human beings all over the world, they're not alone in it. The problem is we feel we can go on forever disobeying God. Woohoo, church, you out there? Improper spiritual relationships, improper social relationships, improper physical relationships comprise a big part of it. Lump them together and you got it right there. Don't let our light shine. Stingy with God, lack faith, refuse to believe Him, Hearts full of pride, hearts full of criticalness. It's hindering the work of God. And no real decision to obey God in all things. No real, in-depth decision to obey God in all things, regardless of the cost. That's got to be made. Now, you may struggle with it a while, but make it. You know, to struggle with something for a while is understandable. But for 9 years? Struggle with a decision for 9 years? A lot of people think we're okay because, you know, we know God, we've been to Bible college, we this, and so you think you're okay. But we've got to be open before God in all things. Now, I don't know how far to go here. Maybe I'll just I know a church that was constantly being robbed by the treasurer. And the church could never have anything but just bare necessities. It was just scraping along because the treasurer was stealing stuff, money from the church over and over again. Now that can't happen here because we've got all the safeguards against it. Besides, our treasurer comes in, he just volunteered his own time. He donated a van to the church. He's donating his time to church. He's not one that is trying to pull money off. But at any rate, we know who our money is. But there came a day when they found him out. And in the church, they had all kinds of money to do all kinds of building, all kinds of things. Now, the Church of Jesus Christ is like that. The devil is the robber. And in a Christian's life, individually and in the church, just barely having enough to squeak by, because the devil keeps robbing all the time. He's robbing us. He keeps robbing our supply, giving us just enough to think that, you know, we've got all that we had and should have, just enough to squeak by, and we're barely making it. But if we ever catch him at it and throw him out, we're going to have excess and be able to really start building. There was a town in which a wealthy person built a new mansion. And not knowing the people, they had a newspaper open advertisement welcoming to a banquet at their mansion. Very wealthy. Anyone who was prominent in town. And the people started showing up. Some of them came in tuxedos and beautiful long dresses, bonnets. Some of them came in business suits. But some came in work clothes, coveralls. Some of them came in really dirty. I mean, some people, you know, I wonder how prominent he is. You know, he doesn't look very prominent. But he answered the call. And into that beautiful, big, sweeping white rug, onto that rug came these dirty feet. All over. Can you get the picture? Mingling with the others, these dirty feet, dirty people, beautiful velvet davenports, sitting down with dirty clothes, with soot on it, grease on it, and helping themselves the food all around, and not knowing how to handle even the utensils, and eating like they're out on the beach. And can you imagine the consternation of the staff in that place? Can you imagine the feel and the hearts of the people of what they're going to do? Now, that's a parable I made up. The Church of Jesus Christ, visible, is that crew of people who came in. Into the presence of God, into his mansion. Here comes the dirty feet across this white carpet, sitting down on his beautiful couches, not knowing how to use the utensils, boisterous crowding in, elbowing, you know, the loud laughter, intruding upon that which should be decorous and befitting people of a certain station in life. That's how it is. God does not want us to raise dirty hands to him and grabbed off food with dirty hands. He wants us to have white garments on and come into his presence in a befitting, decorous, respectful manner in our lives. And so you can't really say the proprietor is really comfortable with everything that's going on, rock music and all, in the Church of Jesus Christ. And behind the held Bible and the pious smile are some secret sins and things that are, some of them, pretty abominable, and hearts and attitudes that are bad. Now I know, dear friends, every Christian is tempted. Even Jesus Christ was tempted. Every Christian has got demons battling him. No man is perfect, and was struggling, and I don't, I'm not talking about absolute perfection, no sin in your life, period. And so therefore you should be, that is, we expect you to be without any sin. We expect you to be willing to be without any sin. We expect you to surrender the sin. We expect you to do everything possible to put it off, put a double guard to your mind, to your tongue, and to resist it, and to trust in God. And that's what God is expecting, a willingness. Now, I won't turn to the scripture, but I'll just tell you about it. In 2 Samuel 14, in verses 29, 30, 31, 32, Absalom, and I won't give you the background behind it, but Absalom sent for Joab, who was general in the kingdom under David, and Absalom, being the king's son, sent for Joab to come unto him. And for reasons having to do with Joab's heart for David, Joab didn't come. He refused to come. And Joab sent for him another time, and he didn't come. So Joab told his right-hand man, Absalom told him, General Joab has a barley field right next to my field. Go out and set it on fire. And he went out and set it on fire. And when he set it on fire, you know what happened? Joab went running to Absalom, saying, why have you set my field on fire? And he said, I said for you to come and you didn't come. Now you've come. That's the, not a quotation, but that's the essence of it. Now, God is having to set some people's fields on fire because they won't come to him when he calls them. And he's called more than twice. So they're getting the fields set on fire. If you won't come, he has to do something to make you come. Now, he's in a better position, of course, than Absalom. He has a right to ask you to come as well. The world in Noah's day was like Thomas. They'll believe it when they see it. So it's with many Christians today, and they will see it. They'll live to see some people lifted up, carried away. And they'll live to see the fields put on fire. My friend, we can't wait until we see the promise of God fulfilled. We have got to believe it. Jesus said, blessed are they that see not and yet believe. The church is like Samson. It's becoming shorn of its locks of submission. It's failing its Nazarite vow. It's flirting with the Jezebels of the world. I better close. Moses said, all those that are on the Lord's side, come over here. Elijah said, how long halt ye between two opinions? If Baal be God, then serve him. If Yahweh be God, then serve him. But make up your mind. We're having a camp meeting Sunday night. Before, I don't know if the bulletin said Sunday morning, or if it's Sunday, it may say Sunday morning, but it's going to be Sunday night. We're making a correction. We're going to have the whole service oriented around the subject of communion. What do they say? Camp meeting. We're having communion before camp meeting. And we're having the whole service built around the attitude of our hearts and the communion truth and some new truths, hopefully, I'll be bringing on that time. And then camp meeting will be following. And then vacations will be over and a new college year will be upon us. And I feel like that in the time we have left, we need to keep digging. We need to allow the Lord to break us. We need to start waiting upon God anew and afresh. We need to start believing Him like we've never believed Him before. And I believe that God will meet us. I would like to enter this college year and camp meeting way uphill and not using it as a device to get uphill. And so with that, I'm going to close. Jesus told a parable, and I won't go into it excepting to say, He said, this generation is like little children piping in the market. And they say, we pipe, but you don't dance. And then they say, we mourn, but then you don't wail. When we pretend there's a wedding, we begin piping, you kids are supposed to be, you're supposed to dance, and you're not dancing. And then when we start pretend there's a funeral, and we begin mourning, you're supposed to go into the wailing act. And Jesus said concerning Himself and John the Baptist, He said, that's what you people are like. You're like little children. You're out there playing these games. And you're not satisfied. You're unsatisfied because John won't dance, and you're unsatisfied because I won't mourn. And nothing can please you, and you're fickle, and you're playing games out here like children do, where there's no real substance to it, and a lot of other things we could get into in the parable. I think it's high time that this generation become mature. And Paul said, when I was a child, I thought as a child, I talked as a child, but when I became a man, I put away childish things. We need to stop putting away the childish things. And above all, put away the world. The world is sucking Christians right down to a level where the demons have access to them, and they can't have the Spirit of God in life. Would you stand, please, as brother and sister come and close with this message and song, and then I'm going to invite you into the prayer room and down to the altar.
to be ready to be caught away. Take me deeper, precious Lord. Take me deeper.
Showed me this week in prayer as to what that taking deeper means. And as God showed me how much He wants to reveal His heart to us, His heart longs to be able to share His heart with His bride in a very full way, but He cannot do that as much as He longs to do it because we're not in the position to receive it from Him. And the thing that is lacking in our lives in order to put us in that position is a reverence for God. God is waiting for us to come into a place where we will revere God in our lives. And by having a reverence for God, that means that we will obey His Word and esteem His Word very highly. And I believe that that's what this song is all about in taking us deeper. And if you do not know how to define that and ask God for specifics, let me suggest that you begin to say, "Oh God, cause me to reverence You. Do whatever is necessary in my life to cause me to have that reverence for You and Your Word, that I might be in that place before You that You can truly share Your heart with me. For I long to be Your bride, and God is going to have a bride that He can share His heart with, that can understand His heart, that can enter into the fellowship of His sufferings. For you see, God's heart is breaking for His people this night. God's heart is broken over the disunity in His church, in His universal church, and for the hurts and the wounds that they are inflicting upon each other. And this is what God wants to share with us, is His broken heart. But we cannot receive His broken heart because we're not in that position. We wouldn't even know what to do with it after we got it. But oh, if we will put ourselves in a position to long to reverence God, we will be in that place then when God can begin to do those deep works in us to bring us into the place with Him so we can have that intimate fellowship with His heart. And then we'll be able to be the vessels that He wants us to be to do something about that in God's people around this world.
Before we close tonight, those someone here tonight that God has saved by His grace, forgiven his sins, took him out of the miry clay, has worked on his heart,